Bros have been going back over the unified magic theory, specifically the stuff that came out of the University of Prague in the 60s. I've been cross-referencing some of the recent data I've collected on the new magical phenomenon. I think that UMT might not be the whole story. Though I know you like it, I'm not saying it's all bad. I think there might be another side that isn't being explored. Well, hey, let's continue that over dinner tonight. How about Samson's Noodles? Yes, again, it's safe and it's cheap. Fine, we'll go wherever you want. I gotta go do the show. Coming to you straight from the most reliably biased source on the Matrix, broadcasting as a proud member of the Shadowcasters Network, I am Opti, and welcome to the Neo Anarchist Podcast. This episode is full of fun facts, all pertaining to the year 2072. And on this, the 81st episode of the Neo Anarchist Podcast, we are going to give you as much as we can. Some might even say too much. But those people have no place here, mostly because they always try to shoot me. But first, as always, I'd like to give a piece of myself back to the fans and slide into our Dear Opti segment. This first question is from 2050 Gardemanger. Dear Opti, what is Nat Bat's best stuffer? Tough question. On the one hand, I hate giving money to that Azzy subsidiary. On the other hand, the big belly burster burrito is mighty tasty. Next question is, Dear Opti, are there any circumstances whatsoever under which you would consider breaking rule number one? I mean, never deal with a dragon. From Tessa Bob. Tessa, I'm glad you clarified which rule you were talking about, because I couldn't think of a good reason not to shoot straight. But as to your actual question, I guess I am forced to say yes, since I have, in actuality, dealt with a dragon before. I did a job for Big D back in the day through Ryan Mercury. I spent some time fighting along Masaru down in the Philippines as well. I suppose the answer is not whether or not you ever deal with a dragon, but whether or not a dragon ever happens to be on the right side of things. For my money, the answer is no, although I have to give credit where credit is due, and say that in addition to Dunkelzahn, who I still have concerns about, even though he's dead, Masaru and Hestabe might, and I stress might, be better to deal with than the Megas. That doesn't mean you won't get screwed, it just means that you may not entirely be at cross purposes with them when you take a run. But still, I think the old adage holds true. Never, ever deal with them. Next question is from Alex H. Dear Opti, have you ever felt jealousy towards another totem, or wondered how different following another totem would be? That's an interesting question. And I suppose the answer to that one has to be yes as well. While I don't speak about it often, the truth is I haven't always been a student of Raven. In fact, when I first hit the streets fresh off the bus, my totem was Dog. Over time, he and I had a parting of ways, during which I did interact with Raven, and it felt a bit odd, honestly. In many shamanic relationships, your totem can feel closer to you than any other relationship. So yeah, it felt rather, taboo to abandon one for the other. Maybe one day I'll discuss the reasons for the switch, but suffice to say that yes, other mentors often look attractive, but there are hidden costs for leaving one totem for another. This one's from Lucas Plenge. Dear Opti, what's up with the military in the Sixth World? Wow, Lucas, that's a very hard-to-answer question in one respect. There are so many military forces on the planet that I wouldn't know where to start. Every nation has one, and it feels like every corporation has one too, although that isn't quite true. So I guess I could answer your question by giving a rundown of every military force in the world and what they are up to, but that would literally take forever. But a simpler answer to your question is that the military forces of our world are doing basically the same thing that military forces have done since the beginning of time. They create instability and enforce one nation's interest over another. Now, I draw a distinction between a militia or even a police force and a standing military. Standing military exists to counter the will of other countries, whereas a police force exists to keep peace among a group of people, to whatever extent that they believe in peace, and a militia exists temporarily to counter an external threat. Standing militaries give nations and now corporations the ability to threaten, intimidate, and enforce their will on countries and corporations with less powerful military forces. If, at the end of the day, you get what you want because there is simply no one more powerful to stop you, then your military strategy is paid off. This is why in the Fifth World, the USA spent more on their military than the next seven nations, China, Saudi Arabia, Russia, the UK, India, France, and Japan combined. They wanted to make sure, and did, that their will was the superior force in the world. As far as what militaries are about now, the exact same thing. The only difference is that now corporate military spending outstrips military spending by nations by about 10 to 1, since the corps are global and need to be spread out. Also, the corporations blur the line between security, police forces, and military, but that is something that would take much too much time to delve into. I hope that helps, Lucas. Keep these questions coming in. You can get them to me on Ares Face Matrix, at Neo Anarchy Opti on Horizon's Twitter, or shoot me a message at opti@neo-anarchist.com, and I will make your dreams come true by answering them. And it came to pass that we turned our faces backwards to a not-so-distant past to learn the lessons that we can learn from a political and corporate happening of that fateful year 2072. Please note that this year is fairly heavy, as are the rest of the years moving forward, so this and future episodes might be split into pieces for ease of consumption. Now we turn to the geopolitics of 2072. The 1st of January saw Horizon offering sharp critique to the Zulu nation for their discrimination against the non-awakened and their isolationist stance. Horizon decided that they wanted to somehow capitalize on the Zulu wealth of magical resources since there were no other megas doing so, and thus far, it hasn't worked. Also on January 1st, the citizens of the former Ute Nation had their Pueblo Corporate Council conditional shares mature. If that didn't make any sense to you, let me break it down. Back in 2067, after the second Matrix crash, the Ute Nation was in economic freefall. The Ute government reached out to the Pueblo Corporate Council and the PCC officially absorbed the Ute Nation. While the native Ute tribes hated this arrangement, it did prevent their economic collapse. The Ute did not become full citizens in the Pueblo Corporate Council until 2072, when their conditional shares in the PCC became residential shares, giving them voting rights in the PCC itself. When this happened, the Ute voting bloc immediately put a motion in to the shareholders' agenda to reinstate As Technologies' business license for the Pueblo Corporate Council, which had been revoked in years prior. Just a few months later in June, the vote on As Technology was deferred by the board of directors of the PCC, which caused widespread protests by the citizen shareholders. The citizens in the Ute territory called for a vote of no confidence against the board of directors. Also in 2072, Denver had the rights to host the Winter and Summer Olympics in 2072. The Winter Olympics began in February, but the Overlord of Denver, the Great Dragon Ghostwalker, forbade Azatlan from participating in the Olympic Games while they took place in his city. Azatlan athletes were barred for the games, but citizens of Azatlan and As Technology were still allowed to visit as long as they stayed out of the Sioux sector. There were numerous scandals during the games, mostly from Azatlan or Olympians trying in various ways to get around Ghostwalker's ban on Azatlan. Mostly this took the form of Ute officials and administrators helping them out, fudging paperwork, or even trying to register Azatlaner athletes through another nation. To the northwest of Denver, Seattle made UCAS national news when its government made the decision not to reinstate Lone Star as Seattle's Metroplex Law Enforcement Corporation. Seattle cited Lone Star's poor performance during the 2071 Tempo crisis, combined with their inability to apprehend the serial killer dubbed the Mayan Killer, as the reason for negotiating the Metroplex's new law enforcement contract with Knight Errant. In Switzerland, during April, the UN passed the Sapient Non-Metahuman Rights Accord, which gave certain rights and protections to non-metahuman sapients that were allowed to metahumans. However, 2 weeks later, on May 10th, the UN Security Council overturned the Sapient Non-Metahuman Rights Accord in a closed-door session, of course. This rolled back protections for non-metahuman sapients, giving them only those rights and individual nations gave them. Protests were intense, mostly from awakened nations such as Amazonia, the Cheers, and Yakut. The UCAS and CAS elections took place on November 8th, and Republican Angela Colleton was re-elected President of the United Canadian American States, while Ramsey McMalkin, the Technocratic candidate, became the President of the Confederated American States. At the time, the CAS voted unanimously to adopt a new flag, stemming from a Virginian schoolteacher's grassroots effort. South of the UCAS border, Bogota continued to suffer as the tension between Azatlan and Amazonia continued to rise. Since 2049, Bogota had been in a sort of tug-of-war zone for the superpowers since Azatlan absorbed Colombia and Amazonia claimed Venezuela. In 2072, Azatlan and Amazonia attempted, unsuccessfully, to divide Bogota into northeast and southwest sections along the Transmillennial Line. At the same time, small units of mercenaries were brought in on both sides to stage attacks on the other, all the while pretending that war wasn't really happening. This came to a head on November 13th, 2072, when Amazonia sent a Black Ops team to investigate rumors of a potentially game-changing Azatlan weapons program. Unfortunately for them, the team was caught, and all-out war began, with Azatlan using Amazonian intrusion as a pretext. 2072 was also when Blackstar, led by Alf Heben, moved into Bogota to harass the Azzies. Alf asked me and the Arcane 3 to go with him, but we refused and stayed in Chicago. As many of you know, that was when Blackstar split. Rather than follow old Alf Heben on his damn fool idealistic militarism, we just quietly stepped back into the shadows. Of course, the real story is that Azatlan had been preparing to declare war on Amazonia for some time, and had troops ready to deploy and a story ready to be rolled out in anticipation of Amazonia's fumble. In fact, Azatlan set them up, having leaked false information to Amazonia, baiting them with rumors that Amazonia couldn't ignore, and then responding with full force once they had an excuse. It's no coincidence, therefore, that mere days after the infiltrators were caught, Aztlan unleashed a coordinated ground invasion deep into the heart of Amazonia. While all this was happening, Amazonia hired Horizon to represent it in the PR battle against Aztlan, knowing that actual bloodshed was only half the battle. The war continued beyond 2072, as most of you know, but the final bit that happened that year was when the Mercs bombed the Nicaragua Canal, closing off shipping. The Aztis said that they would repair it and reopen within 2 weeks, but they strategically missed the deadline. Back up north in Seattle, a child's body was found in front of Mayor Brackhaven's mansion. Of course, Knight Errant tried to cover it up, but pictures and witnesses were hard to keep a lid on. A bit further down the chain of command, District Attorney Beatty hired Dana Oakes as an assistant DA in 2072, focused on cleaning up the Orc Underground. While I find her irritating as a person and as a representative of the law, she has thus far proved to be incorruptible, which is noteworthy for someone in her position. Plus, she's wicked smart, well-connected, and resourceful. Her work with the Orc Underground would prove fateful within a few short years. Over in the Middle East, Islamic Caliphate issued a press release showing support for the IUM, or Islamic Unity Movement, in opposition to the New Islamic Jihad, pledging to rebuild Islam through Islam. In downtown Berlin, Shiawase Special Operations seized an almost 10-block area within the Anarchist Zone. A missile strike happened just before the troops went in, and although there was footage of the event, Shiawase's European spokespeople called the accusation of their involvement absurd. In the Indian Union, 5 men and 2 women were killed during a shootout at the Temple of Jagannath in Puri. The 7 metahumans were trying to steal the statue of Subhadra, which resulted in a shootout. The priests there attempted to negotiate with the 7, but were unsuccessful. The temple itself only received minor damage. Interestingly, the attack occurred concurrent with a visit from the Wuzhen from Hong Kong as part of their tour of the Orissa Triangle. Moving on to the corporate news of 2072, in January, Shiawase and Wuxing mixed it up with warships in the Sea of China over mining stations. The corporate court transitioned the Nairobi Stock Exchange to the African Stock Exchange, opposed by Azanian financiers who were shut out of the financial development in Nairobi. Evo announced that it was expanding its Gagarin Mars base with the goal of being able to accommodate a population of 250. Evo's success with its biosphere projects prompted the expansion, while looking ahead to even more expansion in the years to come. Further, Evo suggested that a leak about this project prompted the station blackout earlier in 2072. If you want me to hold your hand here, it wasn't because of leaked information. It was actually a software malfunction of the intelligent variety. Evo also claimed to have singled out the gene sequences responsible for VTOS, hoping to be able to eradicate VTOS in the future while keeping just enough people sick with it to make a profit for many decades. Sony stock plummeted after a prototype security robot short-circuited and killed 5 employees in Neo Tokyo. On November 10th, the corporate court announced that construction of a space elevator was already happening, scheduled to open in 2074. Alongside the space elevator, the court would also construct a space habitat to be compatible and functional by 2076. The Mount Kilimanjaro mass driver was announced to become decommissioned once the space elevator was complete. Genetique, the gene tech company, announced breakthroughs in transplanting living tissues from paracritters onto metahumans. To my knowledge, Genetique has never made any further announcement about this, leading me to wonder what happened to their promising research. Sutter Krupp launched its own unmanned probe to Mars in 2072. SK was rumored to want to build an arcology on Mars, or one of its moons, using experimental nanites. SsangYong Motors reinvented itself in 2072 when the Wuxing subsidiary began producing its SE-1 for a worldwide market. SsangYong had been struggling since Crash 2.0, but when Wuxing bought it, they just disappeared. Now back as SE Motors, they unleashed the SE-1 as a super cheap, super stripped down vehicle, which has proven a game changer among those with humble means and or narrow streets. For reference, they sell it less than half of what a Nissan Jackrabbit costs. Over at Ares, Roger Soaring Al resigned from his position as longtime CEO of Knight Errant. Soaring Al had a falling out with parent company CEO Damian Knight. Of course, the media reported Roger quit for his own reasons, but the disagreement was over the projects that were being researched at the Ares subsidiary Unlimitech. And Roger didn't quit, by the way. In actuality, he was fired, but was allowed to quit in order to save face. Typical corporate bulldreck. Not many people knew it at the time, but Roger had deep reservations about Ares experimenting with bug spirits to enhance its weapons and military applications. I know at least of a few of you little crows have run into the super gross bug dogs that Ares had guarding a few of its top secret research labs. No wonder Soaring Owl objected. The bug dogs weren't even the worst of it. Ironically, Soaring Owl's departure took place about the same time that KE got that Seattle contract. And lastly, in the Philippines, a Matrix development studio was raided in Manila, leading to the discovery of several Matrix icons which were apparently designed to replicate corporate justice Yoshiko Hino. Whether Judge Hino had actually been replicated was unknown at the time, but ownership of the studio was impossible to find. The ramifications of a corporate court judge being potentially replicated and leading to fraud on the highest level caused massive distrust and scandal among everyone involved, and that still hasn't been dealt with completely. Fortunately for you, what has been dealt with is that you have wasted an entirely good slot of time listening to the Neo-Anarchist podcast. Before I go, I want to leave you with this. What I do is lonely. The number of people still trying to fight the good fight around here gets smaller every fraggin' day. Even smaller still is the number of runners who are bold enough, or loco enough, to share their experiences with others. It's a dangerous, thankless job, and only the hearers get the benefit. As for me, that's okay. I don't need accolades, I can compliment myself just fine. And as for danger, well, it knows where to find me. I guess what I need to say, what I need to admit, is that I am just one man. A larger-than-life, fraggin'-bold, hoop-kicking, truth philanthropist of a man, but one man nonetheless. And unless you other runners step up and get your voices and stories out there, this movement may come to a crushing end. So here it is. Get your voices out there. All you Black Stars, Little Crows, Robin Hooders, Heroes for Hire, and all you Shadowrunners who are as mad as Drek and don't want to take it anymore, get loud, get active, and lend your voices to the shadows. I'm counting on you. The music serving as the background to Audible Anarchy was written by the legend Marshall Parker and reimagined by Unanimity 88. This was the Neo-Anarchist Podcast, and I am your horrifying host, the Raven Shaman who is craving ramen, Opti. Enjoy your freedom, and then share it with others.